I'm Michelle Schloss, and at the Mount David reading, I read from the first section of my thesis, which was called Hide and Seek, and sort of came from my own consciousness. But in the second section of my thesis, I was interested in the storytelling aspects of poetry, so I sort of channeled that into a semi-autobiographical account of Zelda Fitzgerald's life, who's the wife of F. Scott Fitzgerald. So my 18 little pieces are of 10 lines each, and that's what I'm going to read today, detailing her life from childhood to a tragic demise. So I'll start with a quote of hers, which sort of serves as an introduction. She says, "I am really only myself when I'm somebody else whom I have endowed with these wonderful qualities from my imagination." And here's my piece. One. Ladies in Montgomery, neat blonde bobs or long dark locks twisted in ballerina buns, French twists, wispy chignons, refined styles for black and white portrait photographs. What's more, floating lawn skirts, clean pastel colors, white gloves with finished pearl buttons, white bows from old money on Perry Street, kisses on hands, fingers bent forward, inviting. The youngest Sayre girl sees ladies, each an elegant candle without a flame. Two. Learned from mother six cardinal maxims. Ladies, don't let bare feet touch the bare floor. Ladies, don't leave home with gloves unbuttoned or without a clean, pressed white handkerchief. Ladies, don't ever sit with their limbs crossed. And ladies say limbs, not the cruder word, legs. Ladies, don't let their backs touch backs of chairs. Rules for Montgomery girls who wish to wed Montgomery boys, except for Zelda, who wished to be one of them, like father, free. Three. Climbing up trees with bare feet and bare hands, she used to fight Tony's friends, if they would. Zelda held court where father did, court square. Circular banisters for sliding, he never said no. Once passing through a view of the Ringling Brothers circus, hanging out father's office window, the gaudy painted parades of the performers. Once home, father let her out without hat or coat. The backyard swing became Zelda's own circus trapeze, giving the crowd a show. Four. Something theatrical about her eyes, sometimes blue, sometimes green, most often a Confederate shade of gray. Her height an illusion created by posture and dancer's grace. Dress deliberately careless, pleated school skirts bunched at the waist, the slip showing. At night, she tries to shock, daring mistletoe pinned on the back of her skirt. Zelda pours into her flawless green tulle, a player masquerading as herself. Five. Beneath the black eyelash's edge, a gleam of playful derision. Not fast, but not resisting the temptation of the term, lifting her hemline to shimmy and to toddle cheek to cheek. To be thoroughly rebellious, until the war came, with it a crazy vitality. Soldiers left, never returned. Zelda's set did wild things, silly things, often incredible things, but always with a sense of tragedy. Six. She is only 17, for now off to wartime dances, beaux in uniform swarming her veranda. Camp Sheridan brings the Yankee Army, officers like one young first lieutenant. There seemed to be some heavenly support lifting his feet from the ground. She would draw a paper doll with pink shirt, red tie, and brown angel's wings. At the dance, she doesn't ask his name, but he tells her anyway, Scott Fitzgerald. Seven. One bit of mother's training, the Southern Belle's courtly code, reaches Zelda's pen to Scott, the soldier stationed up north. Don't you think I was made for you? I want you to wear me like a buttonhole bouquet. Scott's mother's diamond engagement ring, the source of her lie. In letters, a promise. She never takes off the darling ring. The truth. She condemns it to her trophy box, a secret hidden from impending conquests. 8. It's his book that wins her back, though she is what defines the text. She is Rosalind, in that sense that all criticism of her character ends in her beauty. She trusts her darling Scott, who in turn finds her useful. He keeps her letters, he keeps her own diary too, for raw emotion without regret. She doesn't see his theft, just her reflection in the text. In the mirror, Rosalind stares back, Scott's new wife. 9. She leaves Montgomery in a smooth gray suit. Her friends think they'd never seen her so beautiful, not even one invited to the ceremony. A tiny and hurried Catholic wedding only the Sayre sisters join, plans untouched by Zelda. She's the only ornament at her own wedding. No flowers, music, photos. In a blue-gray spring suit pinned with the single corsage of white orchids Scott had sent her. 10. The accessory known as the wife of Scott Fitzgerald, a witty consort, an articulate consort, a head for hats big as serving platters, lips to sip from tiny teacups at the plaza, a slim frame for slick city suits. Hatched from the southern cocoon, she hides new resentments. She writes, New York is a good place to be on the upgrade, especially for those with a voracious, engulfing ego. 11. It's racket and reporters, speakeasies, illicit alcohol, hushed whispers, and promise. It's bizarre behavior turned to myth. It's blurry rides perched on roofs of cabs. It's the insider's excitement mixed with the outsider's awe. Sprawled across the couch, it's Zelda recounting last night's events. She dove fully dressed into the fountain. A spontaneous color and wit of high-flown metaphor in a southern drawl. 12. Summer there in Westport, dirty laundry piled in closets, a barren kitchen, no one cooked. A ruined automobile, she drove it over a fire hydrant. It is the domestic life of celebrity, between the glowing golden couple and the embittered alcoholics, neither truly fitting reality. She hides in the bathroom, he breaks down the door, and her black eye, a mistake that happened twice. 13. I hope it's beautiful and a fool, a beautiful little fool. Scotty, her sweet baby girl, the small bit of family for her mother, now an alien in his Minnesota. She closets herself inside with the baby, pasting photos of devoted mother and child from those St. Paul newspapers. No one can visit. The baby will wake. The place is too small. We don't want you, she says, and waves them out. 14. Her paintings are repetitious, turning to abstract ballerinas with thick red legs, overwhelmed by canopies of pink tutu. The dancers plie in warped and tilted living rooms where mantelpieces turn on an angle to the haphazard floorboards. In others, little yellow umbrellas float over a colorless Washington Square, thick, turgid brushstrokes, her whimsy or her churning desperation. 15. Fiction is a loose term. She works at hers feverishly with a single-minded discipline, a young southern girl haunted by names carved in the tree trunk, the boy's name carved larger than his loves. Her own byline haunted by Scott's name. But she lives only through the work, everything else to be on hold or dead. Scotty is 6 and left with the nurse. Breakfast is just cigarettes, the inhalation of her words in ink. 16. They reach Paris, she gropes for ballet. The hot studio is a quiet, ghostly, hypersensitized world of her own. Triangular hollows under cheekbones, thin waist and oversized calves tapering into point shoes like one of her eerie painted ballerinas. At the flower market, the tulips and marigolds are speaking to her. Worse, they talk about her as if she can't hear. She says that's the end. 17. Going crazy and calling it genius doesn't make it true. Awake, horrific hallucinations Phantoms, The Valmont Clinic, Prangin's Forals. Scotty, alone in Paris, receiving manic letters lacking time, place, address, scrawlings of love and guilt. She asks the voice on the phone, "It's true that Scott's dead?" He had given her a flower, then took it away, with her lucidity, that's past two. Then, Highland. 18. In a locked bedroom on the top floor, she goes to bed sedated. It begins with a table in the kitchen, up in a hoop of fire. Flames eat every landing to the roof. Wooden fire escapes too. And locked in her room is the woman who'd never wake up, who penned once more to her daughter, "I will be most grateful to be leaving." A single charred slipper found beneath the indistinguishable body that night.